Today we're going to learn about the connections of Philip Jeffries, Mr. C, and that fucker Ray, with another trip to the waiting room, another jade ring, and lots of Twin Peaks time. We got Bobby, Big Ed, Nadine, Sarah Palmer unraveling with a major clue hidden in plain sight. And Audrey drops hints at what could be going on in Twin Peaks The Return, Episode 3. Join me, Isaac Weishaupt, in the Grey Lodge. All right, now, the last episode was a banger. Last episode was one of my favorites. This one, kind of weak, but we got to get through it because there's some important information in there, but we get a little nostalgia from the original Twin Peaks, so not, you know, they can't all be winners, right? But I assure you, things pick up very rapidly, very soon. This might be the last episode that things are kind of like, I don't want to say boring because it's not, but probably not going to be your favorite episode. So let's get through it. Starts out with we're at Lucky 7 Insurance. The Mitchums are doing a conga line with Dougie and the girls. And this is very reminiscent of the season 2 allegations that people thought, man, Twin Peaks got really corny. You know, between this and the incoherent number of characters introduced last episode, the first time I had my doubts, I almost quit. This is one of my quitting points that I almost quit Twin Peaks. I can't believe it. I don't know how I even can say that now. But they're showing up to give gifts to Bud Mullins and Dougie, you know, some matching BMWs. Because recall, last episode, Bud decided to award their insurance claim for $30 million. Dougie handed them a $30 million check. Now they're besties, right? Anthony Sinclair, he's all upset, though. He calls Mr. Todd to inform him about what's going on, because recall that Mr. Todd told Anthony that he needs to get the Mitchum brothers to kill Dougie. So the surprise when he sees him in a conga line when he comes into the insurance company there, Mr. Todd's pissed. He's like, you got one day to kill Dougie. Fun fact, Sinclair's screen, he's working on an insurance claim, and the name on there is Nancy Steiner. She was the costume designer for Twin Peaks The Return. So the Mitchums, they're on this whole gift giving tour. They order up a gym set for Sonny Jim over at Janie E's house with the BMW in the driveway. Janie E's starting to, she's like, I'm loving this new Dougie. Homeboy's got abs and money. Yeah, I'm down. So good for you, girl. Get it. So we see Sonny Jim playing on the, so then that night after the gym set is set up, Dougie comes home and they watch Sonny Jim play on the gym set. And it's really interesting because it's covered in lights and you see a spotlight, almost like a flashlight kind of going around it. And the flashlight, you know, because if you look at it through the perspective of lots of not so hidden references to Twin Peaks, the area and Twin Peaks season 1 and 2, you recall there's lots of scenes where they use the flashlight in the woods, right? That's what it reminded me of. It also reminded me of the Ben and Jerry Horn memory of the babysitter with the flashlight dance, if you remember that. Now we're in Western Montana, and Mr. C pulls up in his big old truck. And inside this like warehouse is Ray and a whole gang of dudes, including Renzo. Is it Renzo or Henzo? I might know it's Renzo. I don't remember. Renzo. Well, anyway, Derek Mears, the guy who plays Renzo, he was Jason Voorhees in the Friday the 13th reboot. The big, tall dude, bald head. But he's the big boss, and he's the big boss because no one can beat him in arm wrestling. Hey, I'm not going to ask questions. Seems odd. I guess in 14 years, nobody can beat the guy. So if you're a new guy that shows up, like Mr. C is showing up, you have one chance. And if you lose the arm wrestling match, Renzo's now your boss. You have to stay and you have to do what you're told. You're part of the gang now. And Mr. C, he's game for all this because he wants to get to Ray. He's like, whatever, clowns. He says, what is this, kindergarten? Good one. So if you win, you can be the new boss. So Mr. C's like, okay, I don't want to be the new boss. I just want Ray. So they're like, all right, bet. So they set up the arm wrestle. And, of course, everyone's positive Renzo's going to easily take down Mr. C. He's huge. He's twice his size. They don't know Mr. C like that. All right. Mr. C proceeds to humiliate Renzo, playing, toying with him like a cat and a mouse before finally just beating him. And he beats him, and then he punches him square in the face and caves his dome in powerfully. So the gang immediately starts calling Mr. C the boss man, and they hand Ray over. And then we get this moment where I believe Mr. C shoots Ray in the leg, and he's kind of down on the ground. And they have this long conversation. It's a long clip. I'm going to play it. It's about 5.5 minutes. You get all kinds of information about Philip Jeffries' role in this whole thing, and where Philip Jeffries might be. Take a listen.
Somebody hired you to kill me. Who is it? I can make you tell me.
I know it. It came through a man named Philip Jeffries. At least that's the name he gives. I never met him. And we talked to him on the phone.
Keep talking.
He set the whole prison thing up with Warden Murphy. Jeffrey said you were going to kill me. He said I could get out and stay out if I killed you first.
Why?
He said that you got something inside that they want.
Did he ever mention Major Briggs?
No.
Easy, Ray.
You know I don't have a gun. I gotta show you something. Jeffrey said I was supposed to put this on you after I killed you.
Where did you get that?
It was given to me right before I walked out of my cell and saw you.
Who gave it to you?
A guard. I don't know. He was dressed as a guard. I'd never seen him before.
Put it on ring finger, left hand. Now, you know what I want, Ray.
You want the coordinates I got from Hastings?
Rather his pretty secretary, Betty.
Do you really think I'm going to give them to you? You really think you could even trust the numbers I give you? I know who you are. Can I reach in my pocket?
Depends on what's in the pocket.
The numbers, stupid. I have the coordinates written out. They're in my pocket.
Ray, where's Philip Jeffries?
I don't know.
Ray, where's Philip Jeffries?
Last I heard, he was at a place called the Dutchman's, But it's not a real place.
I know what it is.
There was a lot going on there. Let's recap briefly. We hear Ray tell Mr. C he was told to kill Mr. C by Philip Jeffries. You know, David Bowie. And he's only ever talked to Philip on the phone. All right. And Philip said he wanted something that Mr. C had. What is that? I don't know. Mr. C asks if he ever mentioned Major Briggs because he's kind of like in pursuit of that guy. And Ray was given a ring through Philip Jeffries. And he got it from a guard. He said the guard, he had never seen him before, but the guard showed up and gave him this ring. And he was supposed to put this ring, as per Philip's instructions, put this ring on Mr. C after he killed Mr. C. Right? And of course, you know what the ring is. It's the Jade Ring. Meaning if Ray was able to successfully kill Mr. C, remember, he shot him. And I think if he would have put the ring on him instead of standing there scared about the woodsman coming through, Mr. C might have went back to the Black Lodge. So Mr. C makes Ray put the ring on and demands the coordinates with which Ray hands over to him. Mr. C asks where Philip Jeffries is, and Ray says, look, I only talked to him on the phone. Last thing I heard, he was at a place called the Dutchman, but he said, that's not a real place. Mr. C shoots Ray in the head, kills him, and Mr. C's like, I know where the Dutchman is. The ring vanishes, and it reappears in the waiting room along with Ray's body. The ring is placed back on that altar table, and finally we see Richard as a part of the gang. Isn't that something? Meanwhile, in Las Vegas, the police, they got Dougie's fingerprints back. And they say he escaped the South Dakota prison. They think he's Dale Cooper. Or Mr. C, excuse me. I'm getting confused. They all laugh about it. They're like, oh, yeah, this guy who can't talk, he's an FBI agent and escaped prison. Okay. And they disregard it. Anthony Sinclair shows up to the police station to ask a cop if he knows of a poison he can use. Apparently, this cop is in on some operation. The cop talks to another cop after Anthony leaves because he tells Anthony, okay, I'll give you some poison. Then after Anthony leaves, he talks to another cop saying, we got to call Mr. Todd to let him know that Anthony's cracking under pressure. So I think they're working for Mr. C and Mr. Todd. Mr. C's assassins are driving through Utah, of all places, talking about the Mormons not drinking coffee, not having sex before marriage. Then Anthony, I know a little something about that, living in Utah. There's some truth to it, but not really. This is a conversation for a whole nother episode, a whole nother show entirely. But I think officially the doctrine says that. Unofficially, I don't know that all of that happens. Anthony, I'm not LDS, so I don't know the true things there, but whatever. Anthony offers Dougie some... Okay, so now we're back at Lucky 7 Insurance. Anthony offers Dougie some coffee at Zyman's. Remember Zyman's where he got the cherry pie and the coffee before? And, you know, Dougie's all about this cherry pie. Of course he is. And we see Zyman's has the world-famous cherry pie. And I thought about it on this episode. I thought, is Zymon's like a parallel reality to Double R Diner or the Lighthouse? Is it part of this world to wake Dougie up? I don't know. Is it the CG? Remember we talked about the Gnostic CGs, the opposing pairs. Is it a polar opposite to Double R or the Lighthouse? Remember, because in the pilot, he says he stopped at the Lighthouse and he said it was the best cherry pie. And then later on, he says the Double R is the best cherry pie. So anyways, Anthony, he's going to kill Dougie himself. He dumps the poison in Dougie's coffee. But then Dougie, somehow he doesn't notice this, but he notices some dandruff on, or dust or something, on Anthony's jacket and starts touching it in a weird way. And Anthony breaks down, dumps the coffee with the poison out and apologizes. And they go to Bud's office to confess that he's been secretly working for Mr. Todd. And Bud's like, yeah, I know, bro. I want you to testify against Duncan Todd. We finally get his name 13 episodes in. It's Duncan. Meanwhile, in Twin Peaks, Bobby heads to the Double R. We see Big Ed and Norma having dinner. I believe this is the first appearance of Big Ed in season 3. We find out there's actually no romance. I thought these two were together when I seen it, but they weren't. You know, like I said, hard being a Twin Peaks fan. Sometimes you don't get what you want. In fact, Norma's love interest, Walter, comes by. We hate Walter, don't we? We hate Walter, don't we? Walter is crunching numbers for the Double R franchises. He's apparently like a very business-minded guy. And you learn a little more about this later. But funny thing is that as Walter is talking to Norma about like he's crunching numbers, she's kind of getting little, she's taking little glances over at Big Ed. I'm like, why isn't Big Ed Norma together? What are we doing? And Walter says, look, you're spending too much time per pie and you're not charging enough. And the whole interaction is summed up with Walter complaining about the pies and her and Norma saying love doesn't always turn a profit because she makes her pies with love. So Dr. Jacoby's driving around and he sees Nadine's silent drape store with the gold shovel in the front window. And they catch up, right? Because she's obsessed with Dr. Am. She loves the show. Fun fact, I believe this is location is actually right across the street from the Double R Diner. If you go to Tweed's Cafe in Snoqualmie. Is it Snoqualmie or North Bend? North Fork? What is it called? Anyway, yeah, I think it's right across the street from the Double R Diner. Then we are, oh, this one's pretty good. We're in the Palmer residence and it's dark and Sarah's watching a boxing match. And again, it's a repetitive clip on a loop. If you recall in season three, episode two, she was watching lions and a hyena eating each other. I think that was on repeat on a black and white. The room is really dark. You see like four cigarette but ashtrays filled up. I'll put the image on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. You see prescription bottles everywhere. You know, some photos of what I think is Laura. But when you look closely, you'll see it. You'll see it. There's a big bowl of corn. And I'm not using silly name substitution for porn. I'm saying corn with a C. Sarah's eating a big bowl of corn. And every time we see the corn, I believe it was in episode one, when they were at the diner, episode two, when Mr. C was at the diner, what was he eating? A big bowl of corn. Not good. What is going on? That electric static sound keeps rebooting the clip. She's just chugging, like drinking vodka. That ain't good, right? Audrey is still arguing with Charlie. Same scene still. I mean, what is going on? But listen to what she says, because she dropped some major clues as to her state of mind and what could be going on here. Take a listen.
Tell me.
Audrey, stop it.
I feel like I'm somewhere else. Have you ever had that feeling, Charlie?
No.
Like I'm somewhere else and like I'm somebody else. Have you ever felt that?
No. I always feel like myself. And it may not always be the best feeling.
Well, I'm not sure who I am, but I'm not me.
This is existentialism 101.
Oh, fuck you! I'm serious! Who am I supposed to trust but myself? And I don't even know who I am. So what the fuck am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to go to the roadhouse and see if Billy is there.
I guess. Is it far?
Come on, Audrey. You know where it is. If I didn't know better, I would swear you were on drugs.
Just where is it?
I'm going to take you there. Now, are you going to stop playing games or do I have to end your story too?
What story is that, Charlie? Is that the story of the little girl who lived on the lane? Is it?
You're the one that wanted to go. Now you're looking like you want to stay.
I want to stay and I want to go. I want to do both. Which will it be, Charlie? Which one would you be? Charlie, help me. Is the ghostwood here?
Audrey said she feels like she's someone else and she's somewhere else. She said she feels like she's not herself. She doesn't know who she is. Is she a doppelganger? What's going on here? She doesn't know where the roadhouse is. I mean, she definitely seems off, right? And Charlie says, are you going to stop playing games or do I have to end your story too? And Audrey says, what story is that, Charlie? And that is the title of the episode. What story is that, Charlie? And Audrey says, Charlie, help me. It's like Ghostwood here. Out of all the season 3 weird storylines, this might be one of the weirdest. And at this point, I wouldn't be so sure what to make of this. But she said Ghostwood, and that's obviously a reference we haven't heard in a long time. I don't think it's come up in this season at all. But it was very pivotal to the whole season 1, season 2, the Ghostwood National Forest, the Ghostwood Project that Ben was trying to sell. And we know that the forest was a place of sort of mysticism. I think this is a very important part of the story, because that was the title of the episode. What story is that, Charlie? Then finally, we're back at the Roadhouse, and James Hurley is up on stage performing. And not only is he performing, he's performing the song that I love, Just You and I. I know people want to clown on that. I think it's a beautiful song, and I love it, and I'm here for it. There's a woman sitting in the crowd there, and she's enamored with James. He's still got it. James still got it. Don't be fooled. And she starts crying, though. I don't know why she's crying. And if you look on her arm, she has a tattoo that says 7663. I would think that's a birthday. A birthday for who? I looked around. I found one birthday that might be of relevance. It says Christopher Kennedy, U.S. businessman and eighth child to Robert F. Kennedy and Ethel Skakel Kennedy in Boston. So again, with the JFK connections. Is it a real tattoo? That's probably something I should look into if that actress has that as a real tattoo. Yeah, I think I might do that. Maybe I'll report that next time. So the episode ends, and it's Big Ed at the gas farm, eating dinner by himself, looking real sad and lonely. No Norma. No Nadine. No nothing. It's sad. And this episode is, it's kind of bittersweet. We get a lot of Twin Peaks stuff, and we're like, man, are we going back to Twin Peaks? I love it. I want it. But we're not quite sure what's going on. So The next episode is Twin Peaks of the Return, Part 14. We Are Like the Dreamer. And with a title like that, you know it's good. You know it's good. So thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for supporting this show. And until next time, stay positive.